You've got to run faster,
she whispered back to him as they raced through the tunnels.
If they catch us, we're dead.
She shouldn't have even said it. At that moment, three guards came running down the corridor, spears in hand. Chapter 59 Willa hurled herself against Iska and pinned him to the wall with her body, then blended into the brown surface of the woven stick wall just as the guards came.
What are you doing?
Iska whispered.
Stop wiggling,
she hissed beneath her breath as she pressed herself against him. As the guards rushed down the corridor, Willa saw that the larger of the two was Lorkin, the commander.
I've been feeding the prisoners in the upper cells just as you ordered, the smaller guard said. But two of them won't eat, and there's one in the lower cells who has tried repeatedly to escape. It bit one of my guards.
Keep calling out the weak ones, Lorkin told him. And the next time the one in the lower cells tries to escape, drag it out of here and throw it into the abyss. They need to obey or they die.
Willa smelled the stench of the guards' bodies as they passed. When they had finally gone out of sight, she exhaled a long breath of relief and uncovered Iska.
How did you...
he started to ask in amazement, but she grabbed his hand and pulled him down the corridor in the opposite direction from the guards. If they were going down into the lower levels, then she was going up.
Just trust me, Iska, Willa said. Follow me as fast as you can.
They ran up through one tunnel after another, turning corner after corner, up through the main corridor of the prison, then down the side tunnel and the many turns that followed, until they finally came to the hole she'd used to sneak her way into the lair.
Crawl in there and hide, she told him.
What? I can't,
Iska protested.
We need to find my brother and sister.
Just listen, Iska, she said. I'll go back into the prison for your brother and sister. I swear I will. But I can't have you with me. You're too conspicuous.
Because of that thing you do with your skin, he said.
That's right, she said. I can blend, but you can't, so I need to go alone.
I'll wait here, but we've got to find them, he said.
Listen to me, she said, grabbing his hands as hard as she could and looking into his eyes. If I don't return, it means I failed, and you need to make it home to your father on your own. If I don't come back, you've got to get out of here without me.
I understand, he said,
nodding.
Be careful.
She had put on a good front for Iska's sake, so that he'd follow her instructions. But as she ran back up the corridor toward the prison cells, she felt the bile rising up in her throat. Her whole body was filling with dread. A terrible premonition invaded her mind.
You're not going to survive this, Willa,
she thought as she ran. She had lived in the vast Dead Hollow lair all her life, but after the time she'd spent in the forest, she realized what a truly lifeless place it had become. It had once been the hidden domain of the forest folk, her people of old, living in harmony with the trees and animals around them, the wood witches sculpting its glorious green, living walls. But now it had become a dark and sapless hiding place. She had always known that her powers didn't work well in the unnatural lairs of the Dayfolk, but this place wasn't much better. After years of the Padawan, there was nothing left here but rotting sticks and dead souls, lifeless Faerun followers who'd given up on the beauty of the world.
You were born here, and you're going to die here. The words came into her mind as she turned the final corner toward her fate.
Without her animal allies and the full powers of the forest, how was she going to find Iska's brother and sister? How was she going to fight off the guards? There were no living trees, no wolves or bears or otters. Nothing she could draw on for strength, and no one to ask for help.
You're not going to make it, she thought
as she ran toward the prison cells. Chapter 60 Willa turned the corner and immediately came upon two guards near the entrance of the prison. She jerked back, pinned herself to the wall, and blended.
"That human has been fighting hard,"
one guard was saying to the other as they came out of one of the larger cells.
"Then don't go easy on it," the other said. "The harsher you are, the faster it will break."
Her skin crawled as the guards walked right past her. She waited for them to go up and out of the prison toward the main area of the lair before she moved. At that moment, an idea came into her mind. The answer had been right here in front of her all this time, but it had taken the guards to remind her. The shouts and screams that she'd been hearing, the pleading eyes peering out at her through the lattices of the cells. She had thought there was no one who could help her. But that was wrong. There was someone who could help her. There were many who could help her. They all had mothers and fathers to get home to. They all had brothers and sisters like Iska. And she was surrounded by them. There were no animals or trees she could draw on here, but there was something else. In each of these cells, there wasn't an it. There was a he or a she. There was a human being, a living, breathing, thinking soul with wants and desires just like her. Someone fighting to survive. She quickly crept over to the closest cell.
"Hey, I'm Willa. What's your name?" she whispered.
"I didn't do anything. Why am I here?" the voice asked angrily.
She couldn't see the prisoner in the cell, but it sounded like an older human boy.
"I'm sorry. I didn't put you in here," Willa said as she studied the outside of the door. "But I'm going to get you out."
"Who are you?"
the boy asked, coming to the lattice and looking out.
"My name is Willa, and I need your help."
"I'm Cassius," the boy said, his voice strong and determined now, almost hopeful.
The doors of the cells were bound tightly shut from the outside with knots of vines. Every time she used her power to reanimate the twisted dead sticks of the lair, it sucked the energy out of her, so she knew she couldn't continue with that. It was a slow process, but she pulled and pried at the vines with her fingers, hoping to unfasten them.
"You're green,"
a small female voice said behind her. Willa turned to see a little girl's pale face peering out at her through the lattice of sticks on the other side of the corridor. The little girl looked like she was no more than 7 years old, and Willa could see the streaks of the tears that had fallen down her cheeks.
"Yes, sometimes I am," Willa said. "What's your name?"
"Beatrice,"
the little girl said in her tiny voice.
"I'll come for you next, Beatrice," Willa said as she finally figured out how to unfasten the vines and open the door to Cassius's cell. "We don't have much time before the guards return," she said to Cassius as he came out of the cell. He was about 14 years old and had dark brown skin and short black hair. "Now listen," Willa said. "Do you think you're able to run?"
"Yeah, I can run," Cassius said, nodding.
"I want you to take Beatrice," Willa said as she opened the little girl's cell. "Can you do that?"
"Yeah, I can do that," he said.
It sounded like he'd do just about anything she asked him at that moment.
"All right, good," Willa said, looking up and down the corridor for any signs of approaching guards.
As Cassius took Beatrice into his arms, she told him exactly what he needed to do.
"Go up this first corridor a little bit, but take an immediate left. Follow it around the curve, then turn right, then left, then two more lefts, and then down."
She could see he was listening intently to everything she said.
"If you encounter any guards, then pull back into the shadows and hide. If they corner you, then watch out for their spears.
They're very sharp. When you reach the escape hole, there will be a boy there named Iska. Tell him Willa sent you. He'll show you the way out. Do you understand?
Yeah, I got it, Cassius said, holding Beatrice. We're ready.
Now go, Cassius, run! And tell Iska to expect more.
Chapter 61. In the next cell, she found an 8-year-old girl, gave her the instructions, and sent her limping on her way. One door after another. Cell after cell. Prisoner after prisoner. She freed them as fast as she could untie their doors, asking them if they'd seen the 2 children she was looking for, and then telling them to run, to hide, and to help each other get to the hole.
If you see the guards, run as fast as you can, she told them.
That's 23 so far, she thought, as she went to the next cell. The more she freed, the more she knew the guards would come. They'd hear the noise. They'd see the commotion. Every child she freed put her further from her own freedom. A little boy with freckled skin, ragged red hair, and a muddy face touched Willa's arm as 2 of the other children ran up the corridor.
I've seen her, the boy said. I saw the Cherokee girl. She was in the cell across from me when I was down in the bad part. She kept telling me not to give up.
The bad part? Willa said. Where is that?
The red-headed boy pointed farther down the corridor.
There's a tunnel off to the side that goes to the right, through an area where there's been a cave-in, and then curves way down deep. It's the 3rd door.
Thank you, Willa said. Now run.
As the boy made his escape, Willa ran in the opposite direction, down into what he had called the bad part of the prison. The rotting ceiling sagged so low that she had to duck beneath it to get through. Other areas she had to climb. Black mold coated the woven stick walls. A dank, unbearable stench filled her nostrils. Finally, she came to the 3rd door and peered into the darkness. Willa saw the arms and legs first, all folded up in the corner of the cell. The hands, the thighs, the whole body was wrapped around something. The brown skin of the arms and legs was dirty, scraped, and bruised. The long black hair was matted, hanging all around the arms and legs and the thing inside. And then the eyes opened and looked at her, brown in color, and staring warily back at her.
She's alive, Willa thought in relief.
The girl's arms and legs pulled inward, wrapping more tightly around the small boy she was protecting in the bend of her body.
Whatever you are, stay away from us,
the girl said, her voice laced with intense fear as she jerked deeper into her cell.
Get away from us!
Willa pulled back, startled. Crammed down in this darkened cell, this girl had been through too much. Willa slowly crouched to the floor, lowering herself so she looked less threatening, and spoke in her softest voice.
My name is Willa, she said. I'm a friend of Iska and your father, and I'm here to help you, Hialeah. If you'll let me, I'm going to get you and Inali out of this cell.
Hialeah stared back at her in shock. It appeared to be the first time anyone had said her name in weeks.
How do you know my name? She asked.
I saw it written on your grave, Willa thought, but she did not say it.
I know your father, she said. He told me all about you and your brothers.
You're going to get us out? She asked in amazement, her voice filled with disbelief and uncertainty.
Is this a trick?
Willa slowly opened the cell door.
Don't come any closer!
Hialeah shouted at her, holding her crying brother tight to her body.
I'm not coming in, Willa said, moving back away from the door. The choice is yours,
she said, speaking so softly now that she knew the girl could barely hear her.
Iska's waiting for us, Hialeah, but we don't have much time. We have one chance to get out, and that chance is now. But we've got to run. We've got to fight. I'm not certain we'll succeed. If they catch us, they're going to kill us. But we have this one chance to either cower down here in this cell or to run for home. Which do you want to do, Hialeah?
Hialeah stared at her, still holding her brother.
I want to run, she said.
When Willa extended her hand, Hialeah took it. She pulled the girl and her brother out of the cramped confines of the cell. As Hialeah rose to her feet, Willa saw she was surprisingly tall, with a long, lean body and arms and legs to match. She had long, straight black hair that fell down to her waist, and her face was filled with stern determination. Her little brother, Inali, clung to her chest, looking around with bewildered eyes, but he'd stopped crying. It seemed as if Hialeah had been holding and protecting her little brother for weeks. It was the bond that could not be broken.
"We've got to hurry," Willa said, leading them up the corridor.
When Willa began to run, Hialeah ran with her. The girl had been resistant to trust her at first, but now that she understood what they needed to do, she was moving quickly. When Willa ran faster, Hialeah stayed right with her. The girl's legs were strong and pumped hard. She and Willa ran side by side, both of them scanning ahead and looking behind them, ready for the worst.
"Just hold on, Inali. I've got you," Hialeah whispered to her brother as they ran. "We're getting out."
When they came to an obstruction in their path where part of the old tunnel had caved in and blocked their way, Willa climbed up on top of it and then reached down. Hialeah handed Inali up to her, climbed up herself, then took her brother back into her arms on the other side. As they ran through the corridors past the other prison cells, Willa could see that they were all empty. She had freed every last prisoner she could find. She, Hialeah, and Inali ran down winding tunnel after winding tunnel.
"It's not much farther," Willa told them.
As they turned the final corner, Willa saw the last of the escaping children at the end of the corridor. They were getting down onto their hands and knees and crawling frantically into the hole. Only one small face remained peering out.
"Iska!"
Hialeah cried out with relief.
Willa's heart swelled with hope. They were going to make it. They were all going to make it.
But then a rushing sound rose up behind them, the pounding of many feet and the clatter of weapons.
"Run!"
Willa screamed at Hialeah, then turned to stand her ground against the coming guards. The first guard charged toward her and thrust his spear. Willa leapt back just in time. But another guard attacked from the other side. There was a swarm of at least a dozen of them.
"It's the Yater!"
Lorkin shouted, looming above the other Night Spirit guards as he pushed through them to reach her.
"It's Willa! Get her!"
Two of the guards charged in, stabbing frantically. Willa dodged and dodged again. She glanced back behind her to see Hialeah running for the hole with her brother in her arms. A guard lunged forward and grabbed at Willa, but Willa leapt out of his grasp. Lorkin jabbed in with his spear. Willa tried to leap to the side, but the sharp tip grazed her leg and sliced through her skin with a painful, ripping tear. That's when Willa realized that Lorkin's spear wasn't just a wooden stick like it had been before. The tip had been equipped with one of the flint arrowheads that she herself had provided to the clan, so sharp that it could easily slice through muscle and bone. One of the other guards thrust his spear and stabbed her in the arm. Bolts of pain radiated through her shoulder and hand, driving a scream from her lungs. She tried to dodge the next stab. She tried to fight them all, but it was no use. She couldn't hold them off any longer. She turned and fled for the hole.
She could feel herself getting farther away from them with every step she took. Her heart swelled with hope that she was going to make it. But as she ran away, Lorcan pulled back his arm and hurled his killing spear like a javelin. It shot through the air and struck her in the neck with a shocking blow and knocked her to the floor. She looked down toward the end of the corridor, and the last thing she saw was Nathaniel's children disappearing into the escape hole. Chapter 62. Her body lay face down, flat across the floor. Searing pain throbbed from the wound where the spear had cut through the flesh of her neck. She couldn't lift her head to see the guards charging down the tunnel toward her, but she knew they were coming. She could hear their shouting. She could feel the pounding of their footsteps and the vibrations of the floor. She had seconds to live, and after stabbing her in the heart with their spears, the guards were going to grab Iska, Hialeah, and Inali as they tried to crawl to their escape. Somehow, some way, she had to stop the guards. Nothing else mattered to her. She closed her eyes, pressed her hands to the woven stick floor, and conjured up the darkest woodcraft she had ever used. She had grown up asking the tendrils of the plants around her for their gentle assistance, and she had learned how to move the living trees with the force of her will. But this was different. To bring these old sticks back, to waken the dead, she had to infuse them with her own blood, her own life. She had to let the vile black twigs absorb the nutrients of her soul. It had weakened her every time she did it, dragging the life from her body. But she had no choice. She pressed her bloody neck wound against the floor, infusing it with the last of her living power. She could feel it sucking the life from her blood so rapidly that she flooded with cold. As the guards rushed forward to grab her, the floor beneath them erupted into a slime of black and twisting undead sticks. The first guard screamed in horror as he fell through the wormy floor. The writhing, grasping sticks sucked the life from his withering body as he plummeted into them. She gasped in astonishment when the wave of his energy coursed back through the floor around her. And then something jolted up into her body, filling her with a surge of strength she'd never felt before. For just a moment, the floor had become the roots, and she, the tree. The remaining guards recoiled in shock and fear. "She's a wood witch!" one of them screamed, as they all backed away and fled. Gasping for breath, she climbed up onto her feet, her arms and legs shaking, not just from exhaustion, but from the pulsating force that had whipped up into her body. She pressed her trembling hand to the bleeding wound at her neck as she stumbled toward the hole in the wall. All the other children had crawled through the hole and escaped the lair. Only Iska, Hialeah, and Inali remained. They were waiting for her. When they saw her coming, they rushed forward to help her. "Your wound is bad," Hialeah said, quickly tearing pieces of fabric from her dress and beginning to work on Willa's neck. "We've got to stop the bleeding." "I gave us a few seconds, but Lorcan and the other guards will go around to the other side and find another way through," Willa gasped. "You need to crawl through that hole and don't come back." "But Willa," Iska tried to interrupt her, but Willa kept talking. "On the other side of this hole, you need to run as fast and as far as you can. Climb the ridge, and then head west through the forest until you reach the creek." It hurt to talk. It hurt to move. Her neck throbbed. She could see that blood was all over Hialeah's hands as she worked on the bandage. But unlike Iska, who was just shaking his head in refusal, Hialeah was listening intently to every word she said.
When they realize what's happened, the night spirits are going to send out search parties looking for you, she told Hialeah. They can see far better than you can in the darkness, so don't travel at night. Follow the creek downstream and look for a very small cave in the rocks. Crawl inside and get down into the water to hide your scent. Stay quiet and hidden until morning. When the sun rises, many of the night spirit guards will return to the lair. That will be your chance. Follow the creek the rest of the way downstream until it joins up with the river, and then follow the river all the way home. The journey will be difficult, Hialeah. Many hours and many miles. But you can do this. Get your brothers home to your father. That's what you need to do. Do you understand?
I understand, Hialeah said, looking at Willa with steady eyes as she tied off the last of the bandage. I'll do it.
No, Iska said, grabbing both of them. You've got to come with us, Willa.
She's not coming, Hialeah said, her voice grim and steady.
I'm sorry, Iska. She's right, Willa said. I'm not going with you, and you'll not see me again after this. I'm going to stay here. I'll close this hole behind you and lead the guards away so they won't know where you and the others have gone. Now that they've seen me, they're going to be looking for me. The one who kills or captures me will gain great pride in the clan. In the meantime, if you and the others can get far enough away, then you'll have a chance.
You can't give yourself up, Iska said, shaking his head.
You're not listening, Hialeah said. She's made her decision. She doesn't want you with her.
I only need one more thing, Willa said, looking at the two of them. Your father taught me some of the letters of the English words, but we weren't able to finish.
Tell me what you need, Hialeah said.
While I was at your house, I learned how to spell my mother's name, but not my father's. How do you spell Killian?
As Hialeah quickly spelled out the letters for her, Iska tried to keep arguing.
Willa, no, don't give up on us. Forget about all this. Come with us.
But even as Iska said the words, Willa's mind focused on the sounds of her father's name, and she heard the echoes of the distant past, of the forward and the back, the left and the right, and the river of souls. She turned back to Iska, knowing more than ever what she had to do.
No matter what else happens, Iska, she said, the most important thing to me is that the three of you get back to your father. He loves you, and he needs you. Do you understand? You must get home.
But what are you going to do? Iska cried. You can't fight them all alone.
I'm not going to fight them, she said. And I'm not alone.
Chapter 63. The last she saw of Iska, Hialeah, and little Anali, they were crawling through the hole and escaping into the darkness. The moment they were gone, she pried and twisted the sticks at the edge of the hole with her fingers, pushing and pulling them, weaving one stick into the other, her bloody fingers dancing across the old rotting bark until the sticks began to move on their own, sucking the life force from her skin and her bones, intertwining like black, slithering snakes until the hole was closed and the snakes went still. As she lay crumpled against the wall, trying to keep herself steady, she imagined Iska and Hialeah escaping from the lair with their little brother, running through the forest with the other children.
Keep running, she told them in her mind. Keep running.
A roar of sound came rushing down the tunnel from the upper part of the lair. pounding feet and pumping legs, laboring breaths and shouting voices, clattering spears and chattering teeth, and a thousand other sounds, all crashing toward her. Holding the blood-soaked bandage to her neck, and knowing what she must do, she slowly rose to her feet to meet them. Her eyes glazed as she waited for them. She could see it in her mind. She could see it all. The long withering of the Faerun race and the rise of the Padawan, god of the Dead Hollow clan. The steel traps, the captured children, and the glistening face. The words of guiding wisdom, the towering strength, and the missing voices. The running parents, the screaming sister, and the red flowing stream beneath the lair. She could see it all. But even through the winter of all of this, there had still been a trace of hope in her mamma's voice when she taught her the lessons of old. And there had been a glare of anger in Gillen's eyes when she saw the injustices in the Padawan's hall. And these were the saplings that might someday grow into the light once more. When 20 guards came charging down the corridor, she couldn't help but suck in a startled breath. She wanted to run, to blend, to hide, but she stiffened her legs the best she could and made her stand. In her mind and her spirit, she detached herself from the world, like a branch broken from a tree, from the sound, from the fear, from the pain that she knew was to come. Lorkin charged forward and slammed the butt of his spear into her face with a battering blow that knocked her to the ground. She lay flat out, face down on the floor, spasms of excruciating pain radiating through her head and neck. She lay there on the floor, very still. She closed her eyes. She slowed her heart. She stanched the bleeding of her wounds. And she stopped breathing. "Is she dead?" one of the guards asked, jabbing at her limp body with his spear. Lorkin crouched to the floor and clamped onto her neck with his hand to hold her securely in place as he leaned down and listened for her heart. He listened for 10 seconds, and then 30 seconds. And then he rose back up to his feet.
"She's dead," he said.
Chapter 64
"Tie the body's hands," Lorkin ordered bluntly.
Two of the guards immediately knelt down and bound her wrists with vine.
"Now drag it,"
Lorkin said. As they dragged her down the corridor, Willa let her body fall limp and her head hang low with her hair covering her face. As they pulled her along the floor, she took a quiet, unnoticed breath and slowly released a few beats of her heart, pumping just enough blood through her body to stay alive. She knew where Lorkin and the other guards were taking her. Time was all she needed now. Time for children to run. Time for children to hide. Time for children to escape out into the world and return to the arms of their mothers and fathers where they belonged. She heard the hisses first, then the snarls and the jeers, and she felt the air change as the guards pulled her into the hall of the Padawan, which was already crowded with hundreds of the Dead Hollow clan. The other Faerun spat at her and shouted at her, enraged with her treason against the lair. Her fellow Yaders were worst of all, snapping and biting at her as the guards dragged her through the clamoring crowd, her legs scraping along the floor.
"Traitor!"
Kiernan and Kydurg shouted as they leapt forward and struck her limp form, sending bolts of pain through her body. As she glanced through the narrow slit of her eyes, out through the tangled fall of her hair,
she saw Gredic watching, too stunned to speak or move, as they dragged her dead body past him. She could see her old friend Gillen, too, her face filled with despair. And many of the Farron in the crowd stood in aghast silence at the sight of a dead girl being brought before them. Finally, Lorcan grabbed hold of her and threw her body brutally onto the floor at the Padawan's feet. The slamming pain reverberated through her bones, but she did not cry out, and she did not move.
"The Wood Witch is dead," he declared. "May the wisdom of the Padawan always guide us."
The Padawan sat on his throne, staring down at her body with grim satisfaction, his shoulders hunched and his quills raised all around his neck and head, making him seem even more massive than he was. There was a bandage wrapped around his right foot, but the skin of his face and arms glistened with the bronze, sparkling colors of his divine power, and his eyes blazed with certainty. As she lay there on the floor, Willa thought that she had been here before. She had been dragged. She had been kicked. She had been hissed at and attacked. But she knew that this would be the last time she would ever be hauled before the Padawan. This would be the last time she would ever see the ancient hall of the glittering birds. Through all the strikes and all the pain, Willa had pulled herself inward. She had not fought back. She had not cried out. She had taken the punches and the kicks, the bites and the spits. She had taken it all. She knew that death was near. But when it came, it was going to be in her own way. All she needed was time. She lay wounded, tied and beaten on the floor in front of the Padawan. But she did not feel defeated. She had given Nathaniel's children a hole to crawl through and the time they needed. She imagined Hialeah leading her two brothers through the forest. She could see them climbing through the rocks of the creek. They were going to make it home.
"Nothing has any meaning anymore," Nathaniel had said to her.
But now it would. She had saved his children. She had saved Nathaniel. She slowly released the muscle of her heart and let it start beating again. She felt the blood beginning to pump fast and strong through her veins. She began to take air into her lungs in deep, steady breaths. As she lay on the floor, she slowly lifted her eyes and looked around her at the Padawan and the Yaders and all the members of the clan. It was finally time to do what she had come to do.
Chapter 65. Lying crumpled on the floor of the great hall, with her hands still bound at the wrists, Willa slowly raised her head and began to gather herself together. Gasps of shock and confusion erupted from the crowd as they saw her moving.
"She's alive!" Gillen yelled, rushing through the other Yaders to try to help her, but the massive Kydurg grabbed Gillen and shoved her back.
"Willa is moving!"
someone in the crowd yelled.
"But she was dead!"
shouted one of the guards who had seen Lorcan strike her down.
"Her heart was stopped!"
Everyone watched in disbelief as Willa, with her hands still tied, leveraged herself onto her shoulder, got her legs beneath her, and slowly rose to her feet. A wave of murmurs and fear ran through the crowd. She stood a few feet in front of the throne and looked squarely at the Padawan. The Padawan stared back at her, his lip curling with malevolence. Unlike many of the others in the great hall, he didn't appear frightened that she had risen from the dead.
He seemed to be thinking through the best way to kill her in front of all the members of the clan, to make her an example of what happened to those who raised their voices against him. But he showed no signs of fear that she possessed some unnatural power that might actually be a danger to him. And it was at that moment that she knew for sure that her hunch about him was right.
"It's all a trick," she thought. "A disguise. A blend. It always has been."
The Padawan rose from his throne and stood to his full height in front of her and the onlooking crowd, the majesty of his glimmering quills raised around his head, and his steel spear of power gripped in his hand.
"You dare to stand in front of me?" he snarled.
"I stand in front of whoever I choose," she replied.
"You're a traitor to the clan," he roared,
raising his spear at her. Willa tried to stand tall, but Lorkin struck the back of her legs with the shaft of his spear and sent her crashing painfully to her knees.
"Kneel before your Padawan, you vermin!"
"She's a traitor," someone yelled from the crowd.
"She attacked the Padawan with the steel traps of the humans," one of the Yaders hissed.
"And she released the prisoners," a guard shouted. "They've all escaped!"
"Traitor!"
people started screaming all around.
"String her up!"
Kaiderg bellowed, raising his muscled arm. Willa scrambled back up onto her feet as a wall of enraged, mottled gray faces and tightening fists came toward her. Gredek and his pack of gnashing, hissing Yaders surrounded her with the rest of the attackers. Gillen and a few others pushed toward her and struggled to help her, but they were powerless against the mass of bodies. The mob of people surrounded her, grabbing her on all sides. She felt hundreds of clawed fingers gripping her arms, her legs, her hair, her neck. Her skin crawled and twitched as their hands and bodies pressed against her. She tried frantically to escape, to wrest herself away from them, but they were all around her, drowning her in their grasping hands. She felt as if she was moments from death, but then a thought poured into her mind. The River of Souls. She could see it, and she could hear her Mamma's voice in her mind.
"You are forever among your people,"
her Mamma had told her.
"The past, the present, and the future to come."
Doing everything she could to steady her fear, she stopped struggling or trying to get away from the mob of Farron around her. She looked into the grimacing faces of those trying to hurt her. And she looked into Gillen's eyes as the girl fought to protect her. She looked at them all.
"Believe," Willa told herself. "Believe in your people."
Pulling in a deep breath, she stood in the middle of the thronging crowd, stretched her bound wrists above her head, and screamed in the old language.
"I want you all to stop right now!"
The startling sound of the Farron words echoed across the hall, up into the decaying wings of the ancient sculpted birds that adorned the ceiling. Gasps rippled through the crowd. The little wood witch had dared to speak the old language in the hall of the Padawan.
"Just stop!"
she screamed again, this time in both the Farron words and the English, so that all of the people could understand her.
"Just stand still and listen to me."
The crowd watched in awe as the vines binding her wrists began to move of their own accord, twisting and twining with life until they unfurled from her hands and fell away to the floor. Lorkin charged forward to slam her with the shaft of his spear like he had before, but she caught the shaft of the weapon in her hand and instantly melted it into a writhing wooden snake and threw it to the ground. The crowd shouted in dismay and shrunk back in fear.
"Listen to me,"
she said as she looked out across the many faces.
You know my name is Willa, and I've been a loyal member of this clan all my life. I just need you to listen to what I have to say.
Listen to her!
Gillen shouted.
She's a traitor,
one of the Yaders hissed.
Let the little one speak,
yelled one of the other Farron in the crowd.
I did not come here to die, Willa said. And I did not come here to fight you or harm you.
As she continued speaking, she felt many of the people in the crowd moving closer, trying to hear her. They were pressing in on her, but it had a different feeling now. They were listening, touching her with their hands, crowding around her.
I came to the Great Hall this night to speak to all of you about Nalik.
It was as if she had thrust a stick into a hornet's nest. A buzz of whispers and agitation whirred through the crowd. Suddenly the movements in the room began to shift. She felt new forces driving toward her, others pulling away.
I've heard the word before, someone said.
What does it mean?
Asked another.
It's forbidden, one of the Yaders whispered. Don't say it,
another hissed.
Death will come,
one of the older Farron shouted.
Don't say the word,
someone warned.
But it's not just a word, Willa said. Nalik is a name. The name of a Farron boy who was born in this clan.
Seize her!
The Padawan screamed from the dais of his throne. Lorkin and the other guards shoved forward to follow his orders, but it was too late. The crowd had engulfed her in a river of Farron bodies. A river of souls. Willa pointed toward the Padawan standing by the throne.
Those who knew the truth have been killed. Those who raised their voices have been silenced. The memory of the past has been pushed from our minds. But I came here to tell you that his name is Nalik. He is not an all-powerful, glistening god. He's a normal, mortal Farron, just like the rest of us.
Don't let her speak another word,
the Padawan screamed at his guards.
Kill her!
The guards pushed into the mass of people, shoving with their arms and stabbing with their spears, forcing their way toward her. But shouts of terror and anger rose up from the crowd. Gredek and many of the Yaders attacked, biting and clawing their way toward her. The mob of people around her rose up into a swarm, like bees around a developing queen of a new hive, pressing in on her, protecting her.
"He claims to be the great leader of the clan," she shouted above the rising clamor of the crowd. "He says that we must always stick together, that we must always care for one another. But has he cared for the ones we love?"
"She's a traitor,"
Kydurg spat as he tried to fight his way through the crowd to get to her.
"She speaks the truth," one of the elders called. "Don't trust her," someone shouted. "She's a wood witch," somebody else screamed. "Trust in the Padawan."
"Let her speak," Gillen shouted out. "Listen to her."
"Kill her."
Feeling the rise of the clan all around her, Willa turned toward the Padawan and pointed at him.
"We all know that all Farron are born with a twin to whom we are bound and connected for the rest of our lives. The left hand and the right, the forward and the back. But where is your brother, Nalik? Where is Killian? Where is the man who was my father?"
Chapter 66. She had finally said the words she had come to say. And when she said them, all of the Farron in the Great Hall stared up at the Padawan in utter shock. slowly coming to realize the full meaning of her accusation. Hushed murmurs of confusion and uncertainty ran through the crowd.
"She's a traitor! Kill her!"
The Padawan ordered his guards again, pointing his long, crooked finger at her, but hundreds of Farren surrounded her, blocking the guards. Climbing up onto the base of one of the Great Hall's old, rotted sculptures, Willa shouted at the Padawan across the heads of the crowd.
"My father was another traitor, just like me, wasn't he, Uncle?" she yelled. "He kept clinging to the old ways, like so many of our loved ones who have gone missing."
She knew that many in the clan had lost people dear to them, those who had spoken up, who had resisted, who had put the love for their family before their obedience to the Padawan. She wasn't sure anyone was listening to her, but then a voice called out to the Padawan from the crowd.
"Tell us what happened to Killian!"
And then many of the Farren started pushing toward the throne, anxious to understand.
"Tell us!
What happened to Nia and little Aliu?"
someone else cried out from the back.
Willa's heart swelled when she heard her mother's and sister's name. Someone must have remembered her family from years before, but they'd been too frightened to raise their voices until now. Knowing brings death.
"All my life, you told me that the humans killed my parents," she shouted at the Padawan. "But I suspect that the truth is that my mother and father committed a crime in your eyes. The crime of raising their daughters in their own way, speaking the Farren language with them, and teaching them the lore of our people. And worst of all, my father knew your name, knew who you truly were, Nalik. He was a constant reminder that you were not the Padawan. You were not a god."
As she spoke, the Farren looked upon the Padawan, and they looked upon her, and they whispered and discussed among themselves, trying to put the truth together.
"You call me a traitor to the clan for what I've said and what I've done," Willa shouted at the Padawan and the guards surrounding him. "And you say I'm a traitor because I freed the humans from the prisons below. But I have never stabbed a Farren with a spear, never punched one with a fist. I live in the old ways, where the members of a clan take care of each other and love each other."
Willa gazed across the faces of the crowd, all of them turned toward her now.
"The Padawan not only murders his own people, he traps and slaughters the animals of the forest who were once our friends and allies. He has abandoned the ways of the forest that keep us alive. He sends out his guards to kill innocent dayfolk and capture their children. He poisons our ears with lies about the humans even as he hoards their machines in his private dens, trying to make sense of what they do."
"If we don't adapt, we're all going to die,"
the Padawan bellowed, trying to intimidate them with the force of his will. But turmoil swirled through the crowd, like hundreds of bees buzzing in a corrupted hive. She turned back to the Padawan.
"I ask you once again, Nalik. Tell us all. Where is your brother? Where is Killian?"
"Stop saying that traitor's name!"
the Padawan spat, seething with venomous anger. His whole body seemed to glow with scintillating power as he pointed his spear toward her.
"You killed your own brother!"
someone screamed. There was no greater loss to a Farren than losing a twin brother or sister. And there was no more heinous crime among the Farren people than killing your own twin. It was the bond that could not be broken, and Nalik had broken it. The entire crowd erupted with rage.
"He's a twin killer!"
someone yelled in the old language, and it brought a burst of joy to Willa's heart. She had thought she would never hear the language again, but now they were actually shouting it. The clan was rising up against the Padawan.
"Where is my mother?"
someone cried out.
You killed my sister!
Screamed another.
What have you done, Nalik?
Yelled a voice from the back.
All the traitors of the clan must be killed!
The Padawan shouted back at them, gripping his spear of power as if he was going to hurl it into the crowd. They shrank back in fear, but they did not flee.
All of you,
Willa shouted out to the Faerun people as she pointed at the Padawan.
I want you to look now at Nalik with your own eyes. Can you see him? Can you truly see him? He's not a shimmering god. He's been tricking us all. He's blending. He's a wood witch. He comes from a powerful family of wood witches. He comes from my family. Even as he vilified the Faerun of old who built this glorious hall, even as he took this sacred place in his own name, he used his own Faerun powers to deceive us. He's disguising himself to look like everything we want our leader to be. It's all a lie!
As everyone in the crowd gazed at the Padawan in amazement, the glistening of his face and body seemed to fade.
I see it!
Someone gasped. Many of the Faerun maneuvered to get a closer look. Others pointed and whispered, their faces filled with suspicion and surprise. The luster of the Padawan's aura dimmed. The wrinkled, gray skin of his massive old body started to become more visible.
I see it too! He's been tricking us!
Someone called out.
The Faerun people of the past used their woodland powers to conceal themselves from our enemies, Willa shouted. Nalik is the first wood witch to use his powers to conceal himself from his own people, to trick the eyes of all the Faerun who see him.
With the help of Gillen and several of the other Faerun around her, Willa quickly climbed down from the base of the old sculpture and moved through the mass of people toward the passageway that led into the Padawan's private chambers.
Stop her!
The Padawan commanded, waving his hands frantically at Lorkin and the other guards.
We have to help her!
Gillen cried, rallying the Faerun around her.
We have to protect Willa!
Everyone come with me, Willa shouted above the commotion. Come see what the great Padawan has hoarded in his dens. No one gets through,
the Padawan ordered his guards as he hurried to block the passageway.
Follow me,
Willa shouted again, raising her arm above her head, and suddenly the mass of the crowd rushed the dais of the throne.
I command you to stop,
the Padawan roared. But the people did not stop. They poured around him like water around a stone. His skin was entirely gray now, his body dripping with sweat, and his face mangled from years of deception. The Padawan lunged forward with his spear and stabbed one of the oncoming Faerun in the chest, sending him dead to the ground. Then he lunged again and stabbed another. Lorkin grabbed a spear from one of the other guards and charged into battle. He thrust his spear into one rider after another, sending them staggering back with bloody wounds. But then five of the rioters surrounded him and struck him down, wrenched the spear from his hands, and drove it into his heart. Lorkin, the commander of the Padawan's guard, was finally dead. The Padawan grabbed a torch from the wall and blocked the entrance to his den.
Stay back!
He screamed at the encroaching mob as he brandished the burning torch from side to side.
I will burn anyone who comes near!
Leading a pack of Yaeters, Gredic and Kaiderg barreled into the rioters to take back the area around the throne and protect the Padawan. Kaiderg grabbed one of them by the head and hurled him aside. A whole new wave of attacking guards and Yaeters pushed into the crowd with their spears. But then the swarm of the angry mob fell upon Kaiderg in force, striking him with many blows.
No!
Gredic screamed, trying to save his brother, but it was too late. Kaiderg's body toppled to the floor with a crash. A new storm of confusion and violence erupted all around as Yaders and guards fought against the surging crowd.
"Stay out!"
the Padawan screamed as he grabbed two more torches and propped them up in the passageway to create a barrier of flame. The torches popped and smoked, and the flame burned high as he added more and